Before we launch into the sermon, just to kind of go back on the announcements, the next Sunday school classes this coming Saturday, sorry, this coming Sunday. I haven't figured out exactly what topic we're doing. So this coming Saturday, I don't know why I keep saying Saturday. This coming Sunday is going to be kind of a just a Q&A, and we'll just talk about whatever's there. I think what we're doing, and I'll just put this out for now, because I'm pretty sure we're going to do this. I think for Sunday school for fall, we're going to be doing kind of current events, media current events. So we are going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about current events, things going on in culture. And I think when I get that solidified, what I'll do is I'll come up with a schedule, and then you can see. And if there's something you're interested in discussing, being a part of, then you can make sure to be there that Sunday for a Sunday school class. But that's coming. The other thing is that one of the announcements was that this Saturday, the reason why I kept saying Saturday was because A-Life has something. They have a big welcome party. For those of you who aren't a part of A-Life, it's even worth going because whenever Gene does something, it's always very, very interesting. So make sure you set your calendar for that and go. Right, Gene? Is that right? It always is. Just as we get into this, if you do have your Bible, go ahead and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And this is essentially the last sermon before we hit the new series in the fall. And in the fall, starting next week, we're going to be going into the life of Joseph, all the way back into Genesis. And essentially, the theme that we're going to be looking at in the fall and the storyline we're going to look through with Joseph is the idea of a life that has been lost and then renewed. Redeemed. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting journey. If you have friends, coworkers, family that are thinking about pondering deep spiritual things, it'd be a good time to go see how life works, see how God intersects with life. But today we're finishing out the summer. And essentially, the last 3, 4 weeks, we've covered a lot of different ground. We went through a psalm, we did the Proverbs. Today, we're actually hitting a topic that I haven't gotten a chance to talk about that I thought, okay, we have one sermon here. Why not kind of deal with this, which is the Lord's Supper, communion. You know, today we're going to be taking communion right after the sermon. And so it's a great time to be able to hear about what communion is and then to apply it. But it's one of those things we don't really preach on all that often. We do it and we see it happen. But a lot of times, even in doing it, we don't realize what we're doing. And so what I wanted to do today was tackle these questions, which is with the Lord's Supper. First question is, what do we do? You know, what is it that we're actually doing? And the second question is, how does it change us? Because there's a reason why we do the things that we do. You know, I'll tell you just very very plainly, you know, as we get ready to take the Lord's Supper after the sermon, I think most of us in this room know what it signifies. We know that it's about the death of Jesus, that it signifies his death. And if you're a Christian or if you're not a Christian, that's a very important thing to know. Because, you know, Christianity is very, very unique. And what we're about to celebrate is one of the things that makes it the most unique. You know, there's no other religion that talks about a God who comes down. In every other religion, if you want to be faithful, if you want to reach paradise, if you want to attain any level of joy and happiness, you need to go up. But in Christianity, it says God has come down. And so, you know, with the Lord's Supper, we remember that. We remember that Jesus is God who became flesh, that God has become incarnate. And in the Lord's Supper, we also celebrate the fact that this God who came down died. And again, that makes Christianity absolutely unique. There's no other religion that talks about a God who is willing to give even of himself. Religions talk about gods who bend, who sway, who do different things, but no other religion talks about a God who loves so deeply and so completely that he's willing to lose himself in that love. And that's really what we celebrate. And so today, again, as we go through this idea of what is the Lord's Supper, we want to answer those two questions of what do we do and how does it change us? And so one of the best places we can go is 1 Corinthians chapter 11, because in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul is giving instruction to this particular church on how to do communion and why it's important. And as we look at it, I want you to understand that that we're really only going to be focusing on. Paul says a lot in here, and there's a lot to unpack, but we're really only going to be focusing on basically verses 23 to about 28, where he really kind of lays out, you know, communion and how that works. So as we go through the sermon, think about what we do and how it changes us. We're going to essentially look at three facets. First is remembrance. You know, there's an element of the Lord's Supper, which is remembrance. Second, which is proclamation. We're told very clearly by Paul that there's an element of proclamation that's going on as we are eating and drinking. And of course, in the idea of eating and drinking, there's feasting. And so those are kind of the three facets that we'll look at as we talk about what do we do with the Lord's Supper and how does it change us? Remembrance, proclamation, feasting. Okay, so first, remembrance. Let me read for us verses 24 and 25. This is Paul to the church of Corinth, and he says this. He says, "For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread, and when he gave thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he also took the cup after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me.'" If you notice, Paul is quoting the words of Jesus, and these are the words that you hear every time we take communion. These are the words that I want to repeat, and that I want to bring to ring in our ears and to ring in our souls as we take the bread and the wine. And if you notice, in Jesus' own words, there is an emphasis there, and the emphasis is on remembering. You know, with each element, he says, "Do this in remembrance of me." Now, again, Paul's writing this letter to the church at Corinth, and it was a letter that he expected to be passed around so the other churches would read this and find out about Lord's Supper too, so he didn't have to repeat it in other letters. But it's unique. Paul is addressing a very unique situation. This is essentially an urban church with urban people where immorality has become commonplace. Now, this is a church where people are doing all sorts, all manners of things that are sinful. And so Paul is really trying to hammer home all throughout 1 Corinthians how holiness, how behavior matters. He's trying to tell the church that just because grace has reached them, they can't simply live however they want. They can't do whatever they want. They can't live their lives as they please. The grace actually causes them to live better, more holy lives. And it's interesting because in light of his argumentation, in light of everything he is teaching the church, Paul understands that the Lord's Supper has to play a prominent place in public worship and in private spirituality. As Paul is trying to get this church to understand that they must live according to the gospel, he realizes that he wants them to understand deeply how the Lord's Supper is integral to both their public life and their private life. And there's a reason why. You know, again, in Jesus' words, he says very clearly that all of this is to remember. You know, there's a remembrance aspect of this. And if you think about it, the Lord's Supper is a symbolic representation. You know, when we do the Lord's Supper, you know, when we take the bread, when we drink the wine, they're symbols. They're symbols of Jesus' broken body and Jesus' shed blood. And the bread and the wine have very, very specific symbolic connections. They connect us to what Jesus experienced, to his death on the cross. And in Jesus' own words, they're given to help us to remember. And you could say, well, why do we have to remember that? I mean, I don't forget that. I mean, I come to church and I remember I see the cross and I go home and I open my Bible. There's a cross on in front of my Bible. I think about the Gospels or you know, et cetera, et cetera. And forgetting is not a big deal. I remember, I know what Jesus did. And I would say, well, we don't mentally forget, but the problem is for a lot of us, we have spiritual and emotional amnesia. You know, we forget very easily, don't we? Now, maybe not like, where are my keys, unless you're getting older, but we forget emotionally and spiritually, right? Like I had this, when I was in Connecticut, I was there for 8 years. It's the first time I was serving in a church as a full-time pastor. And my senior pastor, one of the wonderful joys of being at that church and being in a small local church was, you know, getting to know the pastor and his family and working alongside of him. The head pastor of the church, when I got there, had three kids. During my time there, he and his wife found out they were going to have their fourth child. The interesting thing was they had three kids. When they realized they were going to have their fourth, their youngest at the time was about 9 years old. So there's a 9 year difference from, you know, their third child to their fourth child. So this wasn't a child that they were planning. Not that they were sad or sorrowful that they were going to have him, but it had been a long time. They had thought that they were done having children. And, you know, as his wife found out that she was pregnant, as she went through the pregnancy, you know, it was a lot of joy, a lot of preparation, a lot of expectation. And after she had the baby, we went in to go see her and to see the family. And one of the things she said was, she said how, you know, essentially as all the labor pain started kicking in, all the memories flooded back of her three children and how difficult their pregnancies were. And she said, she kind of had that sound in her voice of, boy, if I remembered that when I first found out, I don't know if I would have been so excited. You know, she essentially said that in some ways, even though she knew mentally like what it took and how difficult it was, emotionally she kind of forgot. You know, she intellectually could remember, but she had emotionally just kind of forgotten what that was. And you know, that's the way we are with a lot of things. You know, I remember as a young Christian, I went to a revival, and I remember feeling this sense of God's love and saying to myself, wow, why wouldn't I live for God every single day? I remember, you know, wanting to go up to the front and tell people about my love for Jesus and just feeling this conviction in my heart. And sure enough, a couple days later, it's gone. Right? We completely forget. We forget the convictions that rise in our hearts. We forget the passions that capture us so quickly. You know, we're people who quickly forget. Matter of fact, when you go into the Old Testament, that's a theme of what's happening to God's people. God constantly comes down. He loves and he pours his grace on them, and yet they forget. And they begin to live as they used to live again. They no longer cherish. They no longer treasure. They no longer delight in. But they live as if God isn't there at all. And they get angry at God. They get frustrated at God. They get disappointed at God. And for us as readers, we read through it and we go, what's wrong with you? Don't you remember what happened to you? But that's us. We are people who constantly forget. 1 minute, we delight in God. 1 minute, we embrace God. 1 minute, we say, Lord, I would do anything for you. And the next minute, we could care less. That's one of the problems all of us have. And that's a spiritual problem. It's not just an emotional problem. It's not emotional immaturity. It's a spiritual problem. Again, we see it all throughout the Old Testament. And so how does God combat that spiritual amnesia? He gives us something that says, every time you do this, it is so that you will not forget again. It is so you will remember. And it's interesting that God, from the very beginning, planned for it to be a part of the everyday, the regular life of the church. So when you look at the early church, they were constantly doing the Lord's Supper. They were doing it at church. Some people say they were doing it in other people's homes just during the week. You know, God designed this so that whenever we did it on this regular basis, we would remember. You know, the difficult thing is that spiritual things get digested quickly and they don't stay with us. And so the Lord's Supper is one of those ways, one of those things that are meant to spark and remind us of the value, the beauty, the depth, the delight that we find in Jesus. And that's one of the reasons why the Lord's Supper is so pointed. I mean, it points us directly to Jesus' death on the cross. Doesn't mince words, doesn't mess around. Takes us directly to the one thing that we center our lives on, Jesus and his death and resurrection. And in that, we remember. So, for instance, today, as we apply that, you know, the challenge is for all of us, no matter how many times you've done communion, no matter how many times you haven't done it, the Lord's Supper today is meant to remind you of the beauty, the value, the preciousness of your faith. That your faith is not about you, that your faith is not about your efforts, that your faith is about his, and that this is what he did to secure you. And in thinking about that, in being reminded of that, I hope that today you delight and that you remember and that you hold on to it a little bit longer than you did the last time. But that's what today's for. Today is so that you remember and that you delight. So that's one of the ways that Lord's Supper, that's one of the ways we do it, and that's one of the ways it changes us. We remember. Second thing that we're told is we're told that the Lord's Supper is a proclamation. And this is a little bit more difficult. But verse 26, Paul says, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." As often as you do this, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Now, I want you to notice something, and we'll kind of tie it into what Paul is saying here, but I want you to notice that when we take the Lord's Supper, the Lord's Supper isn't an individual or an individualistic rite or ritual. No, it's a public thing. You know, so when we take the Lord's Supper, it's corporate, it's public, it's a rite, it's a ceremony. It's something that, you know, that for anyone who walks in today off the street, if you're a part of the church, if you're not a part of the church, whoever you are, you can walk in and you can see it happen. This isn't something we hide behind a curtain. This isn't something that we have on a special Tuesday night when we know no one else can make it except the faithful. You know, this is a public thing. Matter of fact, out of all the things that the church does, worship is the most public thing it does. And so in the most public thing that the church does, the church is supposed to be doing this. So I want you to notice that the Lord's Supper is meant to be very public. This isn't just you and the bread and the wine. And I think that's actually one of the mistakes that we make when we take the Lord's Supper. You know, the Lord's Supper starts and we put our heads down and, you know, we want to start and we want to do everything in a certain spiritual manner. So we close our eyes and we push everyone else away and we imagine we're all by ourselves. We walk up and sure, we see the pastor, the deacons, and the elders, and we take things from them. We go down, but we close our eyes again and we, you know, lock in on this individual thing. In a lot of ways, the Lord's Supper is very different than that. It's communal. It's public. You know, we take it together. That's one of the reasons why, you know, when you do sit down, we don't, in some churches, people take the elements and they eat them right away. If you go to a Roman Catholic church, for instance, you come up and they put the bread, the wafer in your mouth and you eat it. And by the time you get back, it's gone. But it's one of the reasons why in our church, when you sit down, we ask you not to eat and then we eat it together because it's a reminder that we are doing this together as a church, as a people, as, you know, as one body. Why do we do that? Well, because it's a proclamation. We do it for ourselves, but we're doing it for other people too. It's not just for our remembrance. We do it to proclaim to other people that this is what I live by, that this is what's important to me. And in that, we're proclaiming, we're telling each other, we're reminding each other, we're saying to one another, this is what is important, that Jesus died for me. And we're proclaiming that to each other. You know, we're proclaiming, we're telling, and we're not just telling each other, we're telling the world. The world could walk in through our doors, and they are meant to see this is what's important to us. It's a proclamation. We're telling. That doesn't mean that you have to sit down with your elements, and then before you take them, tap someone on the shoulder and go, see, watch me do this. I'm going to, you know, that's not what it's for. But there is a sense in which we are telling other people. We're telling them that this is Jesus, this is his death on the cross, and this is the source and the center of our lives. In the early church, the Lord's Supper was actually one of the biggest areas of controversy about the Christians. You know, they were doing these things where people were hearing about them eating the body and the blood, and people thought they were cannibals. And the funny thing was that it actually became this wonderful way for the church to proclaim to the world, no, we're not cannibals, but our lives are centered around Jesus, his life and his death. And it was a wonderful way for the early church to proclaim the beauties and the uniqueness of Christ. That's still what it is today. We take and we are proclaiming. Now, I want you to notice that this is the normal cycle of things. Inner remembrance leads to outer proclamation. In other words, if you really love and value something, if you delight in it, you will then proclaim it. Isn't that the way it works? I'll tell you, one thing that I've been doing recently that I've really enjoyed is I've begun smoking meat. I knew that would get everyone's attention. I began smoking meat, and that was, I love doing that. And it's, Hopefully, if someone's listening to it on tape, they don't stop the tape right there out of shock and then not realize that I finished that sentence. But that's one of the things I started last year and I really enjoyed. And one of the things that you don't have to wrestle me into get into a conversation about is smoking meat. But you know, when you delight in something, when you enjoy something, it comes out, whatever that thing is. And you know, it's easy to get into conversation about. As a matter of fact, that's a great way to get to know someone. Start asking questions, and then you realize as they begin to talk, you realize the areas that they're interested in. You realize the areas they delight in. You realize what's important to them because those are the easiest to talk about. But that's how it works. It could be anything. You know, it could be deodorant, it could be shoes, it could be smartphone, whatever that is. But remembrance enables you to proclaim. And when you really do remember, when you delight, when you enjoy, when you feast, when you love, when you cherish, then you find yourself proclaiming. And you know, so even as we take, if you notice, there's this dynamic. When you're really remembering, you know, when you're remembering what Jesus has done for you as you take the bread, as you take the wine, then you find yourself gushing, even if you're not saying a word. You find yourself wanting to enjoy and to experience with others. You find yourself delighting and wanting to tell others. And that's a part of what the Lord's Supper is. Now, the Lord's Supper is not just remembering, it's proclaiming. It's proclaiming that you love, that you value, that you delight in Christ. You know, hopefully, every time we take the Lord's Supper, hopefully it reminds you that that proclamation goes far beyond here too. Hopefully, every time we take the Lord's Supper, it reminds you that the proclamation doesn't just happen in these four walls, in this room, but it reminds you that the proclamation happens out there too. That when you're living your daily lives, when you're intersecting with your family members, when you're intersecting with your coworkers, when you're intersecting with your neighbors, people you've never met, hopefully this meal is giving you so much delight and that Christ is building you so up so much that when you're out there, you find yourself proclaiming too. But that's one of the things that we're reminded of here in the Lord's Supper, is that we are proclaiming to one another, and as we go, if we're delighting, if we're enjoying, then we proclaim out there. Third thing I wanted to share with us as we get ready to take the Lord's Supper is a third facet that comes up with Paul's explanation of the Lord's Supper is that not only is it remembrance, not only is it proclamation, it's also feasting. This idea of a meal is actually very, very important symbolically to this idea of the Lord's Supper. This is, I guess I can say this, this is the smallest meal you'll ever take, right? Smallest piece of bread, smallest drink, not going to have anything smaller. You know, imagine if you went to even those really frou-frou restaurants, you go, and even if they give you the small portions, they're at least a little bit bigger than that, and they give you a couple courses. Smallest meal you're ever gonna have. But I want you to think for a moment what that means. You know, here's bread and wine that's a meal. What does it mean to have a meal? You know, a meal has deep significance in any culture, not just in our culture, not just in an immigrant culture where some immigrant cultures are built around food. I mean, meals are very important to human beings, period. Any animal. But you think for us in specific, meals have incredible significance. They have cultural significance, you know, bonding, connection. You know, a lot of those things are tied in culturally to meals. Matter of fact, you know, one of the things that came up when I was in seminary, that my professor said was, he said, you know, if I was an immigrant, you know, I was starting a church as a pastor, I would have lunch every week and you know, whatever that culture was, I would have that food because that's what people rally around. That's what they remember. They go and, you know, it means culture to them. It means memories to them. You know, and if you think about it, it carries so much with it. You know, meals are also significant because they're also significant relationally. You know, meals are very powerful relationally. You sit and you have a meal with someone, and you're much closer. You know, it's different than sitting, you know, sitting at a bus stop with someone. It's different than working side by side with someone in your workplace where his cubicle is next to yours. You know, it's incredibly different. You go to a meal with someone and it's personal. even if you don't want it to be. You know, it's personal. You begin to talk about things. You begin to get to know someone. It's not like you can turn and talk to other people around you at the tables around you. It's you know, it's very kind of direct. There are a lot of things that are going on relationally. A lot of things that happen emotionally in meals. Some people say that that in meals, that's when people even emotionally begin to open up. Begin to talk about things that they won't talk about, just normal chit-chat. But the part that I did want to focus on was, you know, one of the things that's being emphasized here is that physically meals are important. You know, we have to eat. Meals sustain us. They fill us. They satisfy us. They nourish us. And that's actually the connection that's being made here. If you go to verse 34, there's this little argument that's going on. He says, Paul says in verse 33, he says, so then, my brothers, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. So what's happening in the church is they're getting together at people's houses to do the Lord's Supper, and some are coming in hungry, so they're just going up and eating the bread and eating the wine before everyone else gets there. And Paul says this. He says, wait for one another. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, so that when you come together, it will not be for your judgment. Now, essentially, what Paul is talking about is the fact that there is this similarity that, you know, there is that physical food, physical meal has this ability to strengthen, nourish, fill, satisfy, to energize, and how in a lot of ways the Lord's Supper is a spiritual equivalent. You know, this idea that when we take the Lord's Supper spiritually, it nourishes our lives with the life of Christ. That it's the bread and the wine that strengthens, that nourishes, that fills, that satisfies, that energizes. And even if we come in spiritually hungry, we always leave full. I mean, that's a good meal. And anytime you come into a meal and you can walk away saying, I'm satisfied, I'm good, then that's a pretty good meal. And the idea here is that we come in hungry, our souls long. And in taking the bread and taking the wine, we remember what is true, what is right, what is precious, what is real, what is deep. And when we remember that, and as we proclaim it, we find ourselves full. And there's a beautiful picture in that. And there's a beautiful picture in realizing that that's what the Lord's Supper is. It's not just this time to remember, go, oh yeah. It's not something that's supposed to key us to say, go out and tell people, but at the very core of it, it is where your soul feasts. And as we're about to eat, again, this is the smallest meal physically, but it's the biggest meal spiritually. As you eat, this isn't meant to remind you so that you can go home and think about it. This is meant to change you right now. As you take the bread, as you drink the wine, God wants to touch you with his presence and fill your heart with the light, knowing that this is the one who has come to redeem you, to save you in your lostness, to rescue you from your despair. And that the only way he could do this for you was to lay down his own life for you. And as you take each element, there's meant to be not just a joy and appreciation, but your heart is meant to find peace. Because this is what I need. You know, the Reformed position on the Lord's Supper, on communion, is that what we're doing is, when we take the bread and the wine, the bread and the wine are symbols. They don't magically or spiritually become those, the body and blood of Christ. They're symbols. But in the Reformed view, when we take them, we truly experience spiritual grace. God is doing something. And so when we get ready to take, I want you to know that one of the things that God promises is that as you take, God will touch and God will change you. Having said that, this is the perfect message to be able to apply. We have everything set up. We are all ready to go. And hopefully you are too. What we are going to do, again, is very important. If you go through what Paul says, Paul actually gives warnings. He actually says that this is so important that he says to the church, I want you to do it the right way. This isn't willy-nilly. This isn't come and grab and take a fistful and eat it however you want. Paul's instruction to the church is actually very clear. He says to come